Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of February 6th. It's Super Bowl week. How you doing, Jim? What's happening, man?
Man, I'm all excited about the Super Bowl.
I can tell, yeah.
You can tell it's just coming right out of my pores, man. I thought it was sweat, but it turned out to be Super Bowl enthusiasm.
Stop scaring the children. All right. So a lot of people are going to download this right after the game. So who are you picking? It's the Falcons and the Patriots. Who you got?
You didn't need to give me a cheat sheet. I'll go with the Patriots because, well, I've seen the Falcons play
okay.
in my childhood.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with the Patriots as well because that's who I bet on. But I'm rooting for the Falcons because I hate the Patriots.
Are you?
All right. So it's spring. It's spring because the calendar says it's spring and camps have opened. The birds are freezing, the ice is gleaming, and the air is coming out your mouth in the morning air as white as snow. So it's got to be spring, right?
You know, I think if you rearranged those lines, it would be like a Christmas carol.
It'd be spring.
Frosty the spring training snowman.
Frosty the spring training snowman. Yeah, a lot of places up here you can build a snowman and pepper him with baseballs.
Wow.
Sort of like the Hanshin Tigers used to do with some of the outfielders, right? Is that what
that was? A Hiroshima carp, according to Marty Ryan.
That's right. Yep. Tomaki Kanemoto.
Yeah. Yep, put the rookies over by the foul pole and throw baseballs at them.
There you go. He's Frosty the rookie.
Hey, you white boy, the snowman's white.
You can't say that.
Okay, well, you know, if the snow fits.
Oh boy. All right, well, we have a very special episode for you guys this week. We have two interviews. I believe it's the second time we've done this on JBW. We're hard pressed to find two more engaging guests. We have Alex Ramirez, the second-year skipper of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars, and then we've got Tony Barnett, the reliever with the Texas Rangers, who used to pitch for the Yakult Swallows.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to discuss those guys' interviews. We're going to talk about the Shohei Ohtani situation, camp, WBC, and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right. Well, I was fortunate enough to get some of DeNA Bay Stars second-year manager Alex Ramirez's time a week ago.
Yeah. In fact, you know what? I think we actually did these interviews. It was right after the show came out.
Right.
And it was 2 weeks ago.
That's correct.
It'll be 2 weeks ago by the time we release this. And I think we did these interviews at exactly the same time.
Did we? Well,
pretty much.
Well, it's interesting. I don't want to go into the details, but as usual with a lot of these things, you know, they told me basically no chance you're going to be able to get the manager in January because he's just too busy. Yeah. And then I'm sure what happened was they asked him.
And he said, Jim Allen? Heck yeah.
Yeah, that's right. As they all say, well, they don't say heck yeah, but they say heck something. So I got to sit down with Mr. Ramirez at Yokohama Stadium on a very cold day, and we sat in a little booth there, and we talked about things baseball and his first year in charge and this and that, and wow, it was fun. So let's have a listen to a little snippet of that conversation. Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is DeNA Bay Stars second-year manager. What a pleasure it is to say that. Second-year manager Alex Ramirez, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It is. I'm very happy. Second year.
And we'd have you every week if we could. You and Ohtani, we make it a two-man show. Okay, so first of all, you're back for the second year, and obviously, you know, you got to be very hopeful and very thankful for the way things went last year. Now, what do you take from last year into 2017?
Yes, it is. I'm very very thankful for the way we played last year, but I'm not satisfied 100% because I know that we can do better.
Mm.
You know, we have a group of guys, very talented players, young, and I think that they can go out there and do better, especially from right from the beginning of the season.
Right, and I'm thinking back to a conversation we had. I guess it was during the season, and you were talking about you had an opportunity to coach, and you said, "No, my dream is managing." So you're living the dream. How good is that?
Yes. And you know, a lot of people always told me, you know, you should think about coaching first. Oh. You may need 1 year or 2 years to be a coach and then becoming a manager. I always said that, you know, becoming a manager for me is my priority, and then becoming a coach. And especially here in Japan, I know it's not easy, but I strongly believe that I can prepare myself pretty good to be a manager.
Now this year you have kind of since you've become manager, you know, last year a little bit before this, you surprised the heck out of me when you said Shun Yamaguchi is going to be my opening day starter. Well, we were all surprised when he didn't. But now, you know, the next thing is I got to find a new guy. So what's your take on that? Now you lost a guy you really liked, and he's going to be pitching against you. How weird is that? First of all.
Yes, a lot of people were surprised when I named him the ace of the team. But and you know, now thinking back then, I was thinking he's the only guy that I strongly believe that has a chance to win 10 games. Mm-hmm. And he did it. He won 11 games. And everybody was like, oh, okay, well, I guess you did a good job. So who is going to be the next guy?
Yeah.
And looking back at during the season and doing a lot of studies on my pitchers, I felt that Ichida has the best chance to win 10 games. There is not too many left-handed pitchers in this league that can dominate the strike zone as him. Right. And he has a very good record at home. He's 5-1 at home last year. Mm-hmm. And to be able to start the season, he's 2-0 against Yakult Swallows. So, you know, putting all those things together, I felt that this is the guy that is going to take on the ace of the team for the 2017 season.
Okay, well, I mean, this is so much like baseball because it's a two steps forward, and you know, you got a new setback because you lost Yamaguchi, and now you got to have to move into a new season and a new, you know, got a hole there. And how are you guys filling that hole?
It's kind of hard to replace him because I mean the things that he can do, we also have two more Gaikoku Jin pitchers. Mm-hmm. They have a major league experience. They throw pretty hard, both of them, Whelan and also Klein. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that those two pitchers can provide for maybe 10 wins or maybe more than 10 wins. But I think that the guy that is going to field in for him is going to be Hamaguchi, the number one draft this year.
Okay.
This guy is a lefty that can throw also 150, and he throws a forkball, fastball, slider, even a changeup. And like I said, once Ichida, he's a little bit like Ichida, but he throws a lot harder than Ichida. So I'm expecting a lot from him this year.
Interesting. Well, that's, of course, it's not an easy transition to make to NPB. So in the back of your mind, what are you thinking? This is what I want to, you know, how I want to, you've got a plan, you know, this is how I want to pace him. I want to introduce him to this. I want to check out his makeup. You've seen him work probably by now.
Yes. I have seen him, and I think that he is going to be fine to pitch at this level. And of course, I work the rookie guys a little bit different than the other managers. I don't use them as too much, mm-hmm. especially we have good relievers this year, so I may use them 6 innings, 80 to 100 pitches max, and then make sure that he stay healthy during the season. But I'm not going to overuse him at all. So.
So I think last year, although finishing third was not such a huge surprise, beating the Giants at Tokyo Dome was a great experience, but you ain't going to be surprising people this year. So,
yeah, well, that was the best experience last year that we beat the Tokyo Giants at Tokyo Dome. I mean, that was the point where all our fans, they were there. At one point, there were more. I felt that there was more fun for Yokohama DeNA Bayster than the Tokyo Giants. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, the DNA DNA time is now. You know, overcome winning the Tokyo Giants. I mean, that's huge for us. I think that this year, you know, of course, we finished third. Right. We made it to a climax as a third place, but I strongly believe that this year we can do better, and we're gonna go all the way.
Yeah, it ain't gonna be easy because obviously, you know, your former teammate Yoshinobu Takahashi, with the, you know, he was a guy who didn't really, unlike you, he wasn't really wanting to be the manager, and they just said, hey, you come over here where you're gonna be the manager. And as we saw in Hiroshima, similar situation from 3 years ago. The manager, his second year, you know, he kind of figured things out how he wanted to do things, and I think the Giants are going to be a lot tougher this year than they were last year.
Oh, I strongly believe they will be a lot stronger. I mean, they have a lot of new players, yeah. And players that have, you know, experience. But like I said, I mean, the same way they're preparing themselves, I mean, we also are preparing ourselves in studying them and things like that. So I think it's going to be a good series this year between us and the Tokyo Giants.
All right, yeah. I'm obviously the Swallows going to try to come back, your old team, because they won a couple of years ago. It's going to be a lot of fun this year.
It is going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, all that the fans are getting more involved in baseball and supporting their teams. And I think that this year, being honest with you, I strongly believe that the Hanshin Tigers can probably do better than last year.
Oh, yeah.
And because they have a very good team as well. So it's going to be very interesting this year.
Yeah, we're going to have the battle of the three second-year managers, and it's going to be fun. And so we're looking forward to it, and I want to thank you very much for joining us, and best wishes for the season.
Thank you very much.
Rami-chan, thanks much, Guy. Much appreciated.
Rami-chan, really love hearing you talk, and especially about your team and especially about baseball, and can't wait to see you on the field this year, so thanks a lot.
So, John, I know it was short, it's just like 7 minutes, but
that's our typical interview time. It's just short in the off season, I suppose.
Well, it seems short because we talked for basically an hour and then 7 minutes of it made it into the podcast.
Right, right.
So any comments?
Well, or, I mean, I know that you wrote a couple of stories, and I think I saw a link to one of them, and I haven't read the second part, but mm-hmm. I know you got to talk to him extensively, and I'm glad you got new material for this interview. And again, we thank Alex for his time, because he sat down with you for quite a while to do this
interview,
so we appreciate it. You know, I love how he talked about choosing his opening day starter last year. And it wasn't necessarily, it seemed to me, the guy with the most dominant stuff or who matches up better against this team or who pitched the best during spring training and preseason. Right. And, you know, all these competitive things that all the newspapers talk about and say this guy is supposed to be doing this and he's not. And, you know, the counting of pitches and all this stuff. And this guy's not going to make it for opening day and all that. And he said, you know, who's got the best chance to win 10 games?
And yeah,
I like it. I mean, obviously, all those things factor in. He's not throwing out dominance and who can match up and all these other things. But hey, who's got the best chance to win 10 games? And within the framework of being a good starter, he's looking at a guy who can go out there and win some games for him. And I really appreciate that. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And, you know, quite frankly, him, you know, obviously, he's not breaking news because I saw it on TV as much as I could. I've been watching some of the late night news sports programs, and I know Kenta Ishida is a guy he has already named as a guy he wants to tap for his opening day as the opening day starter. I don't know if he's going to stick with that or not. If I were Shoichi Ino, I'd be working hard this season to be the top right-handed pitcher for the Bay Stars, because obviously with them losing Shunya Yamaguchi, there's an opening there. And you know, he was spotty last year. I don't think he has great stuff, but he throws hard enough. You know, he's got enough command and all that experience and all that stuff. But you know, I just like listening to Alex talk about his team and give us the insight. And it's always those insights that tell you about what he's thinking. Like, he says, well, a lot of guys are, you know, I don't use my rookies the way other teams use their rookies. I'm planning out this whole season for them. I'm plotting, and I can see where he's saying, you know, perhaps we're going to let this guy start a few times or X number of times and then, you know, give him a break. Either send him down to the, you know, take him off the roster, send him down and just let him work on his running, do some leg work, some upper body work, but not pitch, and then come back up. Just rest the guy. Don't throw him too many innings. Don't pressure. Don't put too much pressure on him. It's a long season. Let's get him through the whole season healthy and with a good mindset.
Right. We had that last year, and he was getting, you know, I think what you said is very important. He's almost annoyingly practical.
Well put.
And I mean this, it's like everything's about keeping things simple. Everything's about, this is my thinking. He's very clear. You know, I disagree with him, his rationale for doing a lot of things. But the point is, this is his reason for doing things is very sound. And, you know, I don't really know better than he does. Philosophically, I differ from him. But, you know, his thinking is pretty clear. And it's hard to play down how important clarity is. And I'm a person who's pretty opaque. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's true. I say things that aren't necessarily obvious or overloaded with detail. And he's the opposite. You know, he's, you know, this is the game we're going to play. You know, and he talks about, you know, this is going to be our approach to winning. You know, and they're really basic terms, winning, losing, you know, fighting for this, fighting for that. Everything keeps it real simple. And I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, he talked about those things. The thing is, he said, you know, maybe we had a good enough team to beat Hiroshima. I mean, he was proud. He was glad that the team finished in third place, got to the playoffs, beat the Giants. He kept saying Tokyo Giants in the interview, which drives me nuts. You always know that that's not exactly what they're called, but that's what they're known as, so whatever. beating them in the playoffs, getting to Hiroshima, and then they basically got kind of outclassed. And, you know, and at that point, I don't think you could hear it in his voice or in any of the words he said, but it seemed to me that it came across as we were kind of outmatched in that situation. And we had really hit the wall in terms of as far as they could go with that particular team last year. And again, I don't think he said it. He said those things, but I think it came across to me that way. And one of the other things that stuck with me after the interview was the thing that he said about not wanting to be a coach and wanting to go straight to the bench as a manager. Now, I remember, and I love the determination, but you remember he played in one of the indie leagues. He played, what was it, the Gunma Diamond Pegasus is what it's
called? Yeah, in the BC League, yeah.
Right, and from what I understand, when he played, he kind of served in a role as a coach, player coach.
Well, he did. He was the batting coach there for basically one full year.
Right. And then he was a coach of sorts, which you referenced in your story, that he was the roving advisor with the Oryx Buffaloes.
Yeah, he was a hitting consultant with Oryx.
And that was 2015. So
right.
I don't think he went straight from the field to the managerial position without some kind of experience. I mean,
no, there was a little bit.
There's also this. I think if you remember when his last year with the Yokohama Bay Stars as a player, when I did a talk with him, I think this was on JBW as well, that he was talking to some of the players and giving them advice, and it was asked to stop.
Right.
Because
he wasn't a coach.
Because he wasn't a coach, essentially. And you know, as long as the guys were maybe having success, it wouldn't have been a problem. But I suppose I have to believe that guys were not having success and were not following the instructions of their own coaches. And when they were asked where you got this information, they went back to Alex and asked him to refrain from that. And so, I mean, you know,
I think it was more a case of they weren't winning, so they were looking for somebody to blame.
That's probably true, but obviously it didn't damage the relationship because he's the manager there now, so it wasn't.
Well, yeah, it did with his former manager.
Well, yeah.
Although his former manager might not have realized it.
Yeah. So, you know, he didn't come from an absolute zero.
No.
Unlike some of the other guys, like, you know, Yoshinobu Takahashi, who was basically dragged off the field. And
although he was a player coach.
He was a player coach, but he was.
I don't know anybody ever actually saw him coaching.
Yeah, I was going to say he was a player big brother more than a player coach.
And, okay.
Wanted to do more playing than coaching. So, yeah, it's interesting. And other thing with Yamaguchi, I think that was the question I asked you to ask him, which you started off the interview with, which was kind of interesting in that, you know, he strongly believed that he would win all these games for the Bay Stars, and now he's got to go up against him, and it's just going to be weird. And he didn't say that, but it just came across to me as, you know, man, you know, this guy was with us. We helped bring him along, and to go up against him, especially with the Giants, it's just going to be weird. It's going to be uncomfortable, awkward.
Awkward. And the interesting thing that you mentioned, and we're going to get to this. Maybe I'll keep you all in suspense. But yeah, the interesting thing is his going out and naming starting pitchers is very few managers. Of course, he took everybody by surprise last year when he went Yamaguchi, and we went Yama who? this is that righty, that guy?
The one we don't trust.
We're waiting
for him to revert back to that reliever Yamaguchi guy who came in and was pumping fastballs and wasn't getting many guys, wasn't getting all the games saved that we expected him to get saved.
I wouldn't say I wouldn't trust him. You know, if I said, you know, here's 1,000 yen, would you hold it for me for 5 minutes? I'd let him do it. but anyway, so he came out and he again is really Alex like or Rami like, and just said, this is the reason and this is the way we're going to do it. And I really appreciated that. And he talked a lot about, you know, and another example of that, we were talking about, you know, who's the manager you like, you know, who's the manager you most want to be like, or who influenced you, who is the best manager in your career. And I kind of expected one of two answers, and he gave me a third one. I expected either Charlie Manuel, who was a big influence on him in the U.S., and who played before him for the Yakult Swallows, or I thought Tsutomu Wakamatsu, his former Swallows manager, who was essentially his hitting guru.
Right.
And the guy he picked was Tatsunori Hara, and it was interesting sort of for a couple of reasons. One is one which I did get, which was Hara, you know, believed in his players and he expressed that belief, and he thrived on that. You know, you're going to be my guy and I'm going to use you. And basically, until you prove you can't do the job, and Rami's much like that. I want to, and he did have a crisis of conscience in that last year, when his team wasn't playing well. He was going, "You guys aren't any good. What's wrong with you?" I'm paraphrasing him, but he said that he was blaming the players instead of, But what happened was he lost his. You know, he was using the players as an excuse, and he wasn't able to give them the confidence that he needed to give them. He wasn't able to give them the support they, you know, and the way to use them that they needed to be used. And, you know, and that was his excuse, that they weren't worthy.
Right.
And he went back to I had to get rid of it, had to get all that out of my system. And so he, you know, he talked about that. And the other thing he mentioned Hara in regards to is linked to that. And I think this is really Ramirez-like, and that is when he has a plan to a game plan, it's we're going to do it like this, and you're the guy who can execute it because, you know, A, B, and C. These are the reasons I know you're going to go in there and give me a good effort.
Right.
Because you know you can do it. Everybody on the field knows you can do it. You're the right man for this job. You know, and he said this happened last year during the first stage of the Climax Series in the third game, which was a brilliant game. And essentially the point he was making was in the ninth inning, it was a tie game, and Shuichi Murata got on first base to lead it off. And Yoshinobu Takahashi did what Hara would have done, which was put Takahiro Suzuki, the pinch runner, on first base so he could steal second.
Right.
Except he didn't go.
Yeah, he didn't try to steal. Yeah.
Nah. He stuck around and he stuck around and he stuck around, and eventually they figured he's going to eventually take too big a lead, and they picked him off. And Alex said, with Suzuki, you want him to go on the first pitch or the second pitch before you get a gauge for, you know, what kind of lead he's taken, and you can figure something out, and you start pitching him overly cautious. You work him so cautiously that you keep him from stealing.
Mm-hmm.
You let him go at the top of the count. And Hara would do that. He said, nobody can throw you out. They can't throw you out. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. First pitch, second pitch. Or if you don't go, if you're going to go, go early. Otherwise, don't go.
Mm-hmm.
And he said essentially that Yoshinobu Takahashi or whoever made the decision was basically indecisive. And he put him out there and left him out there. And they picked him off. The game stayed tied until the Bay Stars won it in extra innings.
Right.
And something else we talked about was they won it because they put a very aggressive shift on the outfield, into the outfield.
Something you brought up. Yeah, I think you brought it up at the time.
Oh, did I?
Because you went to cover the games and you talked about...
Oh, right, how, right.
Yep, I remember that conversation.
Well, I don't remember it in that context. It was earlier in the season that I mentioned the aggressive shifting. But he said, yeah, we shift a lot against Abe, and we shift a lot against Garrett Jones. And we also shift a lot against Hisayoshi Chono. And as soon as he said that, of course, what I did is I came home and I looked in my data and I said, who pulls the ball the most? Who pulls the ball the least? And he said, we shift to right field against the right-handed hitting Chono because he never pulls the ball. And he was absolutely right. Chono is the guy hits most balls to the opposite field in the outfield of any other hitter in NPB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Anybody. Yeah.
Okay. But, and then here's the thing. It didn't help. It didn't help the Bay Stars. He hit him better than he hit anybody else. so he was right. He was right. It didn't help. Whether he was right and it didn't help, or it was right and Chono made an adjustment, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I still have to make good pitches. But
true enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I really liked all the insight, and I appreciate you doing the chat, and of course we always appreciate Alex and him donating his time, and
yep.
I'm glad it was in January. It was January 23rd, as I recall, and I think, like you said, a lot of managers are getting ready for camp, and they are busy, and so it is kind of a hectic time. But obviously, with the camp not starting, that affords them a little bit more time. So I'm glad he had that and shared it with us.
Yeah, I would appreciate that, and we're looking forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, so yeah, like I said, on the same day, I spoke with Tony Barnett by phone, and he was at his home in Arizona, and it's a longer chat. It's about 20 minutes, and Tony went to the Texas Rangers in the offseason before last year and spent the entire season with the Rangers, and we talked about a lot of things from his debut, from talking to Darvish to Rougned Odor, who's the infielder who punched Jose Bautista when they got into a little spat because of a hard slide against Toronto.
Wasn't even much of a hard slide. He's just got a reputation as a guy that's going to touch you when he slides.
Whatever it was, if it was a hard slide to me, and the rule had been changed and whatever. Tony had a pretty successful first year. He's as great a guy as ever. We certainly miss him, having him here in Japan, but it's great to be able to see him pitch in the mornings, our time normally, and then go out and watch his old team at night. And you'll get a sense for how much I really enjoy talking to him, so here's Tony Barnett. All right, joining us from Arizona is Tony Barnett, a longtime Yakult Swallows pitcher and now Texas Rangers reliever. How you doing, man? Good to hear from you.
Hey, John. Hey, good to be heard from again.
Yeah, I contacted Tony in the off season here, and he says, "Huh, I'm sure you guys have better things to talk about than good old me." And I'm like, "No, man, we want to hear from you. We haven't forgotten you. We loved you when you were here. We're going to love you forever, whether you're playing baseball or not. So anytime we can hear from you, it's a pleasure."
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right. So how was it playing in a mostly English-speaking environment this past season? I mean, you know, you had fewer walls of miscommunication, I suppose.
Well, I mean, a lot less lot less time in the headphones. You actually, you know, you hear all these conversations going on at once now, and it was jarring at first. You know, the first few weeks of spring training, just kind of getting used to that environment again was, you know, being able to freely move about. And I mean, even in my time in Japan, as I, you know, got comfortable with the languages over the years, you know, I was able to do the same thing. But you know how instant it was, you know, just, you know, conversing back in English and trying to pick up on Spanish again, that was fun.
Now, what about Japanese? I know Yu Darvish is there, so do you get to practice your Japanese with him on occasion?
Oh, I do. You know, Darvish has been great. You know, he's been a lot of fun to be around. You know, I never really got to meet him while I played in Japan, and I only, you know, got to watch him play, and you know, I was impressed with the way he always played, and being able to see him firsthand now and the stuff that he brings to the table is phenomenal. It's fun, and you know, just being around him, and you know, he liked to rib me pretty good in Japanese, and test what I'd remember, and if I don't remember things, he gets on me pretty good.
How did he help? You know, you coming from NPB, and he also pitching there for a long time. How did he help in your transition?
Oh, I mean, he's one of the guys that, you know, just made me feel comfortable in my own shoes right away. You know, and, you know, he was, you know, telling guys, "Oh, this guy's great closer, this guy's big time, you know, this guy's, you know, just building me up, you know, just having fun with it, you know, and, you know, making me feel comfortable, you know, around the other guys." And, you know, he'd say, "You know, Barnett's crazy, you know, watch out for this guy," you know, stuff like that. You know, I mean, he obviously, you know, kept tabs on what happened in the NPB while he was playing, and, you know, me and him both, you know, still talk about daily, you know, things that happen in the NPB. But, you know, it's nice to be, you know, around a guy like that who's familiar with the same territory that I kind of came up in.
Right. All right, so as far as I could tell, that was your major league debut when you, I think it was April 5th, and you pitched against Ichiro's old team, the Seattle Mariners. And what was going through your mind as you took the mound that first time for that for your debut?
Well, I mean, it was against Seattle, you're right. You know, I got to, you know, face my old buddy Norichika Aoki as well, and, you know, he ended up hitting an RBI off me. But, you know, it wasn't a very successful opening day, but, you know, it was an opening, it was my debut nonetheless. I guess it's, you know, I was able to get the bad one out of the way early, but, you know, it was, I really don't remember too much about the night. I do remember that, you know, I just wasn't on, you know, my mechanics were off, I was missing all over the place. That's pretty much what I take away from the debut, but...
Thank you very much.
I will tell you that, you know, the opening day, you know, just sitting in the bullpen on opening day in the MLB is a special event. That was something really cool.
I want it declared a national holiday so everyone can go to those day games, because it doesn't make sense to have those wonderful day games and then have all the fanfare and all the pomp and circumstance, and nobody can really watch it because they're playing in the middle of the day sometimes. So it should be a national holiday, right, in my opinion.
Right, and I think they do make it a pretty much a state holiday in Texas from what I remember, because there wasn't an empty seat in the house.
All right. So you went through the season. How many times did you start thinking about NPB batters and comparing them to the big leaguers you were facing?
I mean, you know, I never really compared. Never really kind of saw that comparison. You know, I mean, the only time, you know, get a flashback is when, you know, like, again, you know, get Aoki in the box, you know, and it kind of jars you about, you know, the kind of hitter that he is, which, you know, he was a different, I mean, he's a great hitter. I've always liked the way he hit. You know, he's my teammate back at the at Colton. Obviously enjoyed him always hitting 350 every year, but for the most part, you know, it was different. You know, it's fun talking about these old hitters, you know, that I used to face night in, you know, day in and day out, you know, the Takahashis, the Abes, you know, the Tsutsugos, and those guys that, you know, the stars of Japan today, you know, these guys that we face, you know, and Darvish would tell them too, you know, so it was fun that, you know, to be able to talk about these, you know, hitters that you face and the guys that they're probably going to be seeing on the world stage in the WBC, and, you know, and being able to, you know, let the guys know that, you know, the guys that don't know much about Japan baseball, you know, it informs them that, you know, there's sluggers out there. You know, there's guys that, you know, obviously everybody knows about Otani, doesn't matter where you're from, but, you know,
yeah,
they're serious hitters, and, you know, and it, you go through these scouting reports the same way as you do, you know, over there. So it's fun kind of telling guys about it, but as far as comparing, you know, hitter to hitter, you know, I never really did much of that.
Now, I know analytics has really picked up in the States, and I know they kill it over here in Japan with overloading you with information. You talk about scouting reports, but I'm sure they're more in-depth these days. How do those things compare? Did you have more information over here in Japan, or is it about the same?
I would say the information is – all the information's there, Japan and, you know, over here in the MLB. I think all the information's there. The accessibility to it, I believe, is – From my experiences, it's easier to get access to the information over here with the computer systems and the video rooms that they have going on over here. You just sit down, type in your name, and you can, you know, just type it on a database, and it gets right to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Japan, you got to do a little bit more, you know, searching, you know, a little bit more video search of where this is going, and, you know, copy paste kind of stuff like that. Where, so, but I mean, I remember the last couple of years in Japan that, you know, their technology and the information accessibility was getting much better. So I think they're pretty hand in hand, but, you know, just at the end of the day, I think it depends on the pitching coach on how much information they want you to be fed with.
Right.
So I know our guy, you know, Brocal and Holman, you know, they're pretty keep it simple guys. You know what your job is, know where your deficiencies are, and, you know what you're good at, and hammer all of them home.
Right.
Keep it simple.
Right. So obviously everyone would want to ask this question, but is there anything that you took from Japan that you're employing, that you could tell us, that you're employing back in MLB? Because I'm sure, obviously, you had never faced these kinds of hitters before. So there's a lot of things that you had to learn, I suppose, too, and then try to employ your own style.
Yeah. I mean, the fortunate thing is, you know, as a pitcher, you always have the upper hand the first time around you see guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter who they are. You know, the pitcher is going to have the upper hand because, you know, hitting's hard. You know, it makes it even harder when you've never seen a, you know, certain look that a guy gives you. And, you know, I give a different look, you know, hesitating sometimes, quick stepping sometimes. And, you know, you've seen me throw enough to know that, you know, sometimes it looks like I might just be making something up while I'm out there. But, you know, and when you give guys a look like that the first time around, I always give them the upper hand. So, I mean, just my style that I picked up on while I was in Japan. I mean, you saw the transformation while I was there.
Right.
Just you know, sticking with that, and while I was over here, seemed to work. So I just kind of stuck with that. You know, didn't really change much about who I was as a pitcher, and just kind of trusted my catchers and trusted the scouting reports and went with what I was good at.
Okay. Now, this year, the Fighters are bringing in a guy, Randy Smith, into their front office as an advisor. What do you think about MPB clubs adding a position like that for foreign guys? And do you think it'll change the management style, and how does it help?
I mean, I remember reading something about it, and I was like, you know, I thought to myself, you know, I didn't look too far into it, but I thought, I was like, you know, that's nice to see. I mean, I think from a business standpoint, you know, I think it always helps to, once again, get a different look from a different point of view.
Right.
And, you know, doesn't matter if it's American or, you know, Brazilian or Venezuelan, wherever you may come from, you know, you get a different view from a different cultural standpoint, or just a different mind, you know, something that's been, you know, get a view from somewhere that's been raised differently. So, you know, I think it's a view of a team trying to change and trying to get an upper hand. And, you know, that's what baseball is all about, is trying to find that edge. You know, what's going to be that, you know, the ledge that sends us over the top? What's going to make us just that much better? And if, you know, teams start employing, you know, foreign advisors and it works, then great. You know, but if not, then, you know, I'm sure you'll see them as companies and businesses, you know, make a different move.
Yeah.
Try to see if it works later on. So I think it's just an evolution of, you know, evolution of business.
Evolution, yeah, I thought it was pretty progressive, and I'd like to see more of it.
I mean, it's nice to see change. You know, it's always nice to see change, I think, in sports in a progressive manner.
Okay. Now, do you keep up with NPB, especially your old team?
Oh, yeah. You know, once again, you know, when you get a guy like Darvish, and one of the translators for Darvish, he was his main translator this last year. he was one of the translators that was with us in Yakult, so he was a familiar face for me right away. You know, so I have that connection. I have a Yakult connection along with Darvish's and MPB connection, and, you know, it was always, so we always talked about, you know, things that are currently going on, so it was just always a, it was always a topic. You know, we joke and, you know, bring up videos of, you know, all the fun things that were happening around the MPB.
And what about your old team?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, how can you not root for them, you know? Obviously, you got to watch, like we talked about earlier, you know, talked about Yamada, you know, see him to continue to put up the numbers and, you know, not just be a one-year thing. It's impressive to do it once, let alone twice. So we'll see if he can do it 3 years in a row. And, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, it's exciting to see him, you know, prosper as a young player.
Well, yeah, that's my attitude is, I mean, what is he waiting for? When are we going to see him in the major leagues?
Yeah, I mean, rules are rules. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I know the collective bargaining agreement changed some of the ways that things are going to be done in the upcoming future.
Yep.
I'm not too sure on what they were. I didn't look too far into it because, yep, you know, it didn't really affect me. But, you know, once again, you know, as long as he keeps reducing, you know, I think he'll get his opportunity.
What do you see him being when he gets to the major leagues?
Well, I mean,
who would you compare him to?
He couldn't continue being a second baseman.
Well, who would you compare him to?
Oh, comparisons. I mean, man. I mean, there's. I really don't know. I think I'm really bad at comparing players because I try to see guys, you know, for their individual creative style, and, you know, he's definitely got his own. I mean, you see the way he hits. It's something that he just. It's his. You know, he's an authentic player, and so it's hard to compare guys like him where he's not a really big guy, but, you know, he hits the ball like he's a, you know, power-hitting third baseman, and yet he's got the speed to put up 30, 40 bags a year. I mean, it's impressive. So you hope guys who put up these numbers that are once-in-a-lifetime numbers, you hope to see those guys do that for an entire career and be able to see that firsthand would be, you know, pretty special for me.
Yeah, I could see him really killing it in Texas, man.
I mean, you know, the ball, you know, I mean, again, I mean, we got a guy named Rougned Odor who's just about the same age as he is and hits the ball just about as hard as he does. So, I mean.
And he hits other, yeah, he hits opponents that hard, too.
Don't mess with Rougie.
Don't tell him I said that, man.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I obviously he could play a different position, Tetsuto could, and. I'm just looking at the connections, and I'm thinking you'd be a great liaison to help bring him over to the Rangers.
Well, I mean, I don't even know when would he be eligible to come over. Do you even know what that would entail for him to come over?
Well, with the CBL changes and all that stuff, I mean, he'd have to be posted, and then the team would have to agree to that. So
right.
I'm just
so
assuming
if he
puts up
a. Three more
he's
years?
Got, yeah, he's got much more time. He's 20. He's going to be 23 this year. So yeah, he's got a while.
So hopefully in 2 years, you would think, you know, if that's what his dreams and aspirations are, you would probably think, you know, 2 years just from, you know, from recent history on how teams handle the posting system. So it's a couple of years, you know, see how he grows, you know, how he grows, and hopefully I'm still pitching in 2 years.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, that is a key. That is a key. So we've got to keep you healthy. That's the first thing. We got to keep you healthy.
He's entering his prime, and, you know, I mean, and I'm trying to trick him every way, you know, every which way at this point.
Well, you stay away from all the doors and don't sneak out of MLB while you're still healthy. I just want you to be healthy.
Man.
I think if you're healthy, you're going to be producing. So I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, and I think so as well. But you know, it's a grind of a season, and it's. The MLB, it's the volume of games, how fast it happens. That was eye-opening to me.
Yeah, I always told people about how every Monday they don't have games normally in Japan, and it's kind of a cakewalk through the season. And in the MLB, it's, you know, you can spot a couple days a month where there's an off day with no game.
Right. We had two off days two off days at home last year. So, you know, that just kind of tells you know, I spent 2 days off at home in Texas.
Right, right.
You know, a lot of the times your days off are on the road. So the volume of games is just a tick higher than the MPB.
Yeah, and that's from March through September. So people think about that. Yeah, think about when you don't have a day off.
Yep.
All right. What's the deal with the USA's attitude toward the WBC? What's going on there?
Guess, like, how do you figure? Because, I mean, I know in years past it's always been a topic where they say they're not fielding the top, the top tier guys. But, I think you look at it this year, and I mean, I think you're getting a pretty solid group of top tier guys to go out there and play. Mm-hmm. I know Scherzer had to pull out due to an issue, but if I know correctly, there's some top line guys that WBC is going to run out there this year.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to it. I hear more about guys not playing, and I hear the Latin clubs are coming off of their season, and then the Asian clubs they start early. So the American team guys are at a disadvantage basically because they're behind both of those sides, and then I hear guys say that they don't want to get ready that early, that it impacts their season.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I'm sure certain guys, but from everybody that I've talked to that has performed in the WBC or is performing currently, I got a couple of my teammates. They're excited for the opportunity. They're getting ready a little bit earlier, and I know, personally, Jonathan Lucroy, he believes in, he believes in the USA across his chest, and, so does Sam. And, I've talked to these guys, and they're excited. They're excited to be a part of it. And, I threw my hat in the, ring, to see if, I could possibly be chosen. But, I don't think, that's not going to work out this year. But I think there's a lot of guys that really do believe in, trying to bring home it. WBC title because they don't like losing, and I think a lot of the narrative that gets given on that is a lot of just kind of hearsay, because everybody that I've ever talked to that's ever performed for a Worlds or a WBC or a Team USA thing, it's a prideful thing, and I haven't met anybody that's taken it for granted.
All right, you heard it here first. Tony Barnett says the USA is going to win the WBC this year. All right, awesome. I'm just trying to translate. You're used to people translating for you, so I'm just trying to get it out of here. All right, last one. Obviously, you spent a year away from the Swallows, and they had an awful, awful season. Do you think they can? I know you don't know that much about the newly acquired players and all that stuff, but do you see them bouncing back from that season?
No, we did it before. I was a part of a few bad teams. Over there in Japan, with the Colt, and I was over there for, a few really good teams, I thought. Teams that, I thought had the chance to, win it all. We came up short both times that, we really had the chance at, first year for me back in against Chunichi. They went on to win it. And then, obviously, the year I left, 2015, we just ran into a hot SoftBank Hawks team. But, I mean, they've done it before. They've got the talent to do it again. You look around that team, and a lot of the core guys are there, and a lot of the core guys are still performing. And when you've got a lot of the core guys still performing, all it takes is one or two extra guys to, pick up the load a little bit, and that, adds on 7, 8, 9, 10 extra wins. And you think of, 10 extra wins in the NPB, it takes you from 67 to 77, and that's a lot. I mean, that's...
Yeah, in the Central League, that would be huge.
Yeah, and, in the year in 2015, the guy who really stepped up for us that year was Yuhei. He kind of, really kind of came into his own that year, and I think that was one of the main reasons why, we kind of, jumped, leapfrogged, the Giants and everybody else, so to speak, was because all the core guys were performing, and then we had one or two guys that were, wavering in a couple of years before, and then all of a sudden they just stepped up their game and just, took us to that next level. So I think they can do it again. They've got a lot of the same coaches around, a lot of the same great baseball minds around. And, I believe they'll be back to winning days pretty soon.
Okay, so let me just summarize here. Tony Barnett says the USA is going to win the WBC, and the Yakult Swallows are going to win the Central League title.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Great talking to you.
Undefeated. They're going to run. I mean, in Japan, they're going to have to make up run rules.
Awesome. All right, man. Stay healthy, and we'll be watching. And obviously, CJ Nikowski is going to be over there calling games for you guys as well. So we'll be really interested, even more interested in Texas Ranger games this year.
The NPB ties just keep growing stronger, don't they?
Awesome. Awesome. All right, man. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you again. Thank you very much. We appreciate the time.
All right. Be good, John.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, John.
Yes, thank you very much, Tony. Thank you again for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was great listening to you, Tony. I mean, I've had a lot of times, spent a lot of times talking with you in Japan. It was really cool to hear you talk about making the jump to the major leagues. And I would want to ask you about is the – I love when you said sometimes it looks like I might be making something up as I go along. It sure does. Man, when did you take up acting? Because it sure does look sometimes like you're making it up as you go along. Man, you are good at that.
Well, I made
you it got up as, you got him fooled.
Yeah, I made it up as I went along. I was just trying to interpret what he was saying. So it sounded like he was saying the U.S. is going to field a strong team and try to win this thing. So, and it said, and he also said the Swallows were really good and they have the ability to bounce back. So that just sounded to me like, you know, number one and number one. Anyway, what was the thing that, what was the thing that stayed with you most then?
Well, I thought a couple of things. I love the bit about the stuff about Darvish because we don't get a lot about Darvish. And we don't get a lot about Darvish because when he was in Japan, he didn't talk to the media very much.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to hear another side of Darvish that is a little more fun-loving.
Right, right. Yeah, right. That locker room banter kind of a side of Darvish. Yeah, it is. It is.
Right.
But he seems to be that kind of guy. I mean, I still follow him on Twitter, and he seems to be that kind of guy who will he's got a dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
And yeah, he'll give you some ribbon if he likes you, if he thinks you're worth the time, obviously.
Mm. And Barnett's crazy. Now, where
what
did that
exactly
come?
Do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, where did that come from? I wonder. What was I missing? We heard snippets of Barnett of Tony saying weird stuff, but you know, heck. If we labeled everybody who says weird stuff as crazy, then there'd be nobody to do this podcast because we'd both be locked up.
Me first, then you.
Okay. Well, the order is not important. I really enjoyed that bit. I the opening day experience was interesting. You know, making opening day a national holiday so people can watch. Well, Tony, I've been saying that for years. But I always made it a national. I always made it a holiday anyway. I never went to school and or work on opening day. You just don't.
That, you know, you're quite progressive, and you are ahead of your time.
I mean,
parents weren't very strict. At least your mother wasn't very strict. And
no,
so.
I tell her mom I'm going to opening day. She's going, oh, man, I want to go. And, you know, my friend's dad would drive us or I would take the bus. So, you know, it's like, write me a note from school, opening day. Yep, here you are.
Wow. No, it wasn't like that at the Gibson house. It was school over everything. But hey, look. There's still time. we can make it on national holiday, and with the guy in charge now, it's probably a lot easier.
I got a TV guy there, I guess. So yeah, it could be.
Well, I can tell you what stayed with me. I mean, obviously, yeah, I was teasing him about the Swallows, and you know, he says we did talk a little bit about Logan Andrusek and his disappearance from the team last year. I don't want to call it a disappearance. I don't want to make it sound like it was MIA or anything or AWOL, but he did suddenly disappear from
the team. He was there one day and he wasn't there the next, so right. Yeah, that's fair enough.
And so we talked about that, but I just his belief and faith in his core teammates that he showed, and obviously I you know, he's going to say that, and I don't know how much he really gets a chance to watch them, but and they obviously had a poor season on the mound more than anything, because they were really good scoring runs, and Tetsuto Yamada was awesome. But his faith in them, that kind of, you know, just showed me that he's still emotionally invested in the Swallows.
Well, yeah, why not? I mean, why not? It would be a shock if he said, well, no, I'm not in Japan anymore. I can't really, I don't have enough. I don't have the luxury to be paying attention to the Swallows. I've got to concentrate every fiber of my being on the Texas Rangers. Now, if he was Japanese, He'd say that. But no Japanese would actually believe it.
Well, yeah, unless he were Hiroki Kuroda, then they would believe it. They might. Well, they tend to believe it.
Yeah, because he says stuff that sounds serious. I'm Hiroki Kuroda, and I laughed. I laughed last year. Cut me some slack. And I'm joking because we know that's not true. But the point being that yeah, he's pretty serious. But yeah, obviously he's gonna say that about the swallows, and he's not gonna be serious like a Japanese person, you know, and say I don't have time for that unless you know, of course, he's Hiroki Kuroda, as you said. But yeah, the swallows, yeah, I think yes, they certainly have the personnel that they could win it. I don't think it's a big chance, but 2 years ago, you know, everything kind of went right, and Yamada had that amazing year. He had a good year. He had the best half season of his career this past year, and then he got hit in the back, and he didn't want to see any pitches inside the rest of the year, and he hit like Kenta Imamiya, regardless of, and I don't mean that in a sort of, you know, mocking way of anybody who would call him Super Kenta or anything like that. But
Super Mia.
Yeah. That's Jason's expression for this, the Wonder Boy. And because he's an amazing player, and he does amazing stuff sometimes. He certainly does. But he hit like a pretty routine second baseman half the year, and that's not Yamada. So, but yeah, everything went right 2 years ago. Hatakeyama was good. Shingo Kawabata was cutting everything foul that he didn't want, you know, he didn't feel like hitting, and then he just wait for a fat pitch like Takuya Nakashima did last year with the Fighters. And it was kind of a magical season. They had enough pitching. They had plenty of hitting. Last year was kind of like a step backwards. And
Yeah. We'll get to that stuff in the, the prediction show.
But right.
Yeah.
But my whole point is it's not crazy to think they'd win it again. It's just not anything I think is obvious.
Right. Okay. And then another thing that stayed with me was him talking about the grind of the schedule. And I always tell you guys, I'm like, you know, they have every Monday off just about in NPB, and it's such an easy schedule. And like they get real bent out of shape. Like, we got to play 9 games in 9 days, and I'm like, so, you know, that's the way baseball is supposed to be going. You guys, I don't know why you take every Monday off anyway. You stretch out the season, you know. And when Tony said that the Texas Rangers had 2 days off at home the whole season, that really, you know, that really kind of puts it into perspective, I hope, for people who are listening about what a grind it is day after day to mentally prepare. It's not just the physical stuff, because you've got to know what you're supposed to be doing out there. You can't go out to the mound, especially as a pitcher, and say, oh, who's this guy again? How are we going to attack him? And, you know, you can't have all those mound meetings. You got to get it. And, you know, they talk about pace of play in the States, too. So now not only do they want you to grind every day, but they want you to do it fast.
Yeah, disco speed.
Yeah, it's not like in Japan where you can go out, you know, play with the rosin bag, kick some dirt, rub the ball, and, you know, have all this party time in between pitches.
Well, I think that's where the, you know, that whole delivery, you know, with the little pause comes in. It's like, hey, we take 1 day off a week, you know. Right. We're gonna take our time coming to the plate, you know.
Yeah, that too. So, and the last thing that really stood with me was his talking about Tetsuto Yamada, and you know, I jokingly said, yeah, he can be the liaison who brings him to Texas. That would be a really great place for him, I thought. And yeah, Odor could either move positions, or Tetsuto could, you know, I could see him playing if he hits like he could probably hit in Texas where the ball carries and it's always hot. And I think he could get a lot of doubles, enough to play a corner outfield spot somewhere. You know, you can get he doesn't have a bad arm. Left field is always where you put guys who really can't do very much. So he could play left field, and I don't know.
He could play left field.
I mean, you know, 2 years down the line, you never know what they're going to have. And
He could play left field. He can certainly play second base. I'll just make my objection here. Okay. Is saying he could play in Texas because it's hot and he'll get doubles. But, you know, any place he plays, unless it's a park that kills him. You know, just ignore that stuff. You know, it's a park that helps him. Well, that's good. But the point is, he's got to play in every park against every opponent. He's going to, you know, this bit about, oh, this park will help him, or, you know, the team should get him because this park will be good for him, or he can't hit here. He can't, you know, they got to hit in every park. It's if it's a good hitter's park, it won't. If it's a bad hitter's park, it'll hurt his numbers, so he can't play there. It's going to hurt everybody's numbers.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I think, I don't know about the home run numbers, but I think he's got a good enough swing. He's got a good enough plane to his swing through the batting zone that he's going to make a lot of contact, and he's going to get on base and make, you know, hit hard balls on a line somewhere. And
he's
fast. People are going to catch him. So yeah,
he's fast and he's athletic. He's a hard worker. And the other thing is, he's going to be 25 in July, which means he won't be in the international bonus pools. He'll be a professional. My guess is if he has an MVP year, he's gone.
Huh.
So.
Gone, yeah. I hope so. You know, with every vein of my existence here, because he's ready to go.
He is. Right. So it's almost like he knew when he made this deal with the Swallows, this was not public, that when he made this deal with the Swallows that he was going to play for them for 3 years before going overseas, that he knew they were going to change the CBA to make it worth his while when he was 25.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, making a two-seam transition. I want to talk about camp.
You could make it a Yu Darvish one-seam transition.
Well, it's the one seam. It was the Tomoyuki Sugano one-seamer, but I don't know. Maybe Darvish is throwing one too. Camp opened on Wednesday. Camp TV is on and broadcasting, coming to you live every day with announcers jibber jabbering for hours on end about whatever while the players are going through workouts. People, just workouts. And
just a note for you listeners: when the announcers at spring training are talking, they are jibber jabbering. When we talk about spring training, we are educating.
There you go. We are dropping.
Educating?
Knowledge.
Jibber-jabbering. Okay.
Knowledge dropping and jibber-jabbering. Just know the difference.
You got it right, Dan.
Experience it and feel it. All right, so the only team that is working out abroad is the Nippon Ham Fighters, and they're in Peoria, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to the report heard around the world in a few minutes here. But, you know, the rookies all look good.
The rookies always look good.
They look good because it's the first couple of days, and they're just trying to unfree. Although one of the rookies, I think it was Sasaki Chihaya with the Lotte Marines, forgot something or got the wrong glove or had to go back. Anyway, you know, I'm watching the news now, so every little thing these guys do is big news. So he wasn't
Yusuke Kikuchi forgot his uniform.
Yep. It's exciting. Ikumbumaru Takahiro Ikeyama already ripped Louis Okoye, a teenager in his second year who came back. Do you see how he looked physically? He's added a bunch of muscle.
Yep.
But he's got he injured a finger. I guess it's a tendon that he injured in his finger, and he's not going to be there for opening day already.
Right.
But they were already sending him down to the minor league team because Ikeyama's biting on him for not. I don't know. What do they expect him to do in the off season? I mean, how is he going to get better? Did they send him to Cuba? Not to Cuba, but to the
Taiwan
or Republic
or
something?
Australia? No.
Winter ball or something? I don't know. Anyway, it's you know, like I said earlier, there's ice all over the ground in some areas of Japan. It is not spring. Leave these kids alone. let them get ready, for goodness sakes.
Wow. Another brick in John Gibson's spring training wall.
Although, you know, it was good to see Casey McGee, although he looked weird, to be honest, in that Yomiuri Giants uniform.
Yeah.
We got the return of Toshiya Sugiuchi. The Giants might have reloaded for a little run there, and they looked like they might have something going on. But anyway, camp opened. I'm not excited about it. I said that last week. I remember saying it something to that effect on the show last year, and someone wrote on the Facebook page, "Hey, I watch all the spring training camp TV program that I can get, and I love spring training and all this other stuff. And I like spring training too. It's not spring. That's my issue.
Oh, okay.
I love spring training. I love that baseball is starting, but it's just too cold. But everywhere.
Okay, let's. I think we need to put this in context, because you said you're not excited. But when you say you're not excited, what you mean is you're not as excited as you could be potentially. But admit it. Admit it. Admit it. This means baseball is closer than it was a week ago. You are a little excited.
Look, I'm a little excited, but I need time. I just need more time.
The cold doesn't.
I need warmth.
The cold does not allow the proper pumping of blood, baby.
Right. First, I need time. Second, I need a little bit more warmth. Then I'll be extremely excited. I'll be screaming at the microphone, you know.
Okay.
And we'll be doing our prediction.
Oh, in other words, so you can – it's John. Okay, so for a word for people around John, baseball is now at a safe temperature that you could be around him without saying, "What the? Will that guy shut up about the umpires?"
We won't reach DEFCON 5 until the season starts.
I have to relay a favorite Jeff Williams story. When I asked him about, you know,
Jeff Williams, the former Hanshin Tigers
and the current Hanshin Tigers scout, one day he said, "I said, what's the weirdest thing that you had in Japan?" And he said, "Well, I can't tell you the weirdest thing, but one of the weird things that happened was the
wait
first
a second. You can't drop that nugget off and then leave it."
He wouldn't tell me. So he said, "But I'll tell you something that was weird and still gets me is the first day of spring training, the catcher." In the bullpen, catching a pitching practice, arguing balls and strikes with the umpire.
That would be me. That'd be
John.
Like something I would do.
But
yeah.
But that would be in Arizona, where it was warm enough for him to get excited, and not in Miyazaki.
That would certainly be something that I would do. I had my issues with the officiating crews when I was playing anything. So yeah, that would be something. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the WBC and, again, the report heard around the world. And it was official. It became official today on Friday. We're taping on Friday, by the way, that Shohei Ohtani is out of the WBC because of this ankle issue that I didn't even know it was that bad.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, you know, he seemed to play in all the rest of the Japan Series games after. I think it was game, I can't remember what
it was. Game five in which he was hurt.
Game five, okay.
And then he played in game six.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was going to keep him off the mound. And then, you know, I saw the report on Wednesday night, tweeted it out Thursday morning. And then I also tweeted out something that I saw a report that he might have to have surgery, which I haven't seen anything to follow that up since Thursday.
Right.
But tweeted it out today. I actually tried to beat you with the tweet because I, you know, we got the, you know, how Gigi comes across, and I was in the newsroom and they came with a little sheet of paper. And
you
I tweeted it out and then I look and it says Jim Allen tweeted, you know, 8 minutes ago. And I'm like, 8 minutes? Where was he?
I was at home and my coworker was on the sports group line feed and said it just came over the internal messaging system. So we got the little alert.
They actually sent it out then. That's why. Because I was within 2 minutes I had started typing.
I think I had about 30 seconds on that first one.
Wow, you're pretty good. So he's out, and obviously this changes the whole dynamic of the Samurai Japan roster for the Japanese team. And, you know, the biggest thing for me, though, was this seemed to go down in a kind of ugly way.
In an ugly way. Well, you know, my colleague, our former colleague, or your former colleague, was saying basically they ought to fire Kokubo for having Ohtani play against Mexico and the Netherlands when he was on the mend from his ankle.
Well, that too. Look, Kokubo already has his issues anyway.
Yeah. First of all, yeah, I'm sorry. This guy's managed. They're having him manage Japan's biggest games every 4 years, and he's when he starts the WBC, he will have managed 31 games.
Yeah,
in his career.
Maybe mismanaged is a better word.
Hashtag high heat.
But here's the thing for me is I was watching TV and his reaction was very curt because Ohtani came on and made the announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I've said I knew he was behind schedule in his mm-hmm. recovery, but I didn't know the details,
mm-hmm.
end quote. So that's what he said to the TV media. And it wasn't so much the words, but it was the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Because the words, like I said, it was very short. He seemed to be caught off guard that Ohtani was this injured. And I don't know if the right channels had been traveled to get to get this message to him, or if the whole process was wrong.
No,
but
he
seemed like he was a little bit upset.
I think he was switched to the wishful thinking channel.
No, I would say that too, but I also saw a note on Twitter where this Sports Hochi reporter said this announcement should not have come from the fighters. This announcement should have come from NPB and the Samurai Japan side.
Well, technically, it did come from the Samurai Japan, and actually the decision for him not to hit came from Samurai Japan.
Right. In the end or at the beginning? Because in the beginning, he came out and made the statement on the news. I didn't see anything from officials.
Yeah, Kokubo, the first news came from Kokubo, and the decision not to pitch came from the fighters. The fighters shut that down, and they said, we will leave it up to the national team to decide whether he can hit or not.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that he was taken off the mound.
Okay, well, that was done by the fighters, because fair enough.
Okay,
what's wrong with that? Yeah. What's wrong with that?
I'm not saying that anything was wrong with it. I'm saying that it didn't seem that Kokubo, it seemed like Kokubo was caught off guard by it.
Well,
that he didn't know it was coming, and that he was informed along with other members of the media or something to that effect, or just before he was meeting with the media.
I think part of that had to do with the time difference, but you think somebody would have called him before the media told him.
Right. Well, I'm not claiming to know when the media told him and when he knew. I just think that he seemed to be caught off guard. And like I said, the Sports Hochi reporter wrote a column about it, essentially saying, why is this announcement coming from the fighters? It should be coming from NPB officials or Samurai Japan officials, mm-hmm. and it's not. This is weird. And then we get the announcement today, and this time it came from Kokubo and the Samurai Japan side that he's not even going to be on the roster.
Well, I think there's two things operating here, and one of them is that Ohtani is such big news.
Mm-hmm.
He's such big news that he's a little bigger than their capacity to deal with news.
Right.
And it's sort of like they don't know what to do. Normally, they just, you know, okay, who's going to do it? And they, you know, they sit down and they talk about it. And they decide and they have a plan and okay. And you have to understand also that in Japan, typically teams sit on information until it's the most convenient time for them to release it.
Right.
Okay. You see this all the time when there's players moving between in baseball and other sports between Japan and a team in another country. Typically, the team in the other country will report the transfer days or weeks before the Japanese team will.
Seen that a lot. Yeah.
Happens regularly. But with Ohtani, it's kind of like, this is something people want to know now. We'll tell them, and hey, wait, you're supposed to delay. This is Japan. You're not being Japanese.
Yeah.
Slow down.
We got to move along.
We got to move. Now, the other thing about the WBC
mm-hmm.
is that I think we have to, and this is, I think, the surprise, is that Mr. Ramirez is going to have to look for starting pitcher, opening day pitcher number 3 or number 2, because I'm guessing Kenta Ishida is going to take Ohtani's place on the WBC roster.
Yeah, I saw reports about Shota Takeda of the SoftBank Hawks.
Okay.
I think I saw another name out there, so we'll just have to see who gets that spot. But obviously, this is going to have immeasurable negative impact on Samurai Japan. I have him getting out of the group and making it to the next round, but I can't see him winning the whole thing or anything like that.
I didn't see that anyway. But
you know, you never know. They have quite capable pitchers. But,
sure, they do.
And it's just one guy, but It's a really quality pitcher and hitter that they're going to be without. So a guy who can do two things is always better than just one guy. See, they're going to replace him with a pitcher, but that means they're
going to lose basically one of their best hitters. I mean, exactly. And the guy who's got probably the best major league, most major league like approach hitter. The other thing I was interesting that, you know, the fighters say, well, he's not going to be available to pitch on opening day because of the injury. And I mentioned to Kazuto Yamasaki that, that's not going to bother the fighters because he's such a good hitter. If he should be fit to hit on opening day. You know, if they let him hit 5 or 6 days a week while he's warming up to get ready for his debut in the pitching rotation, they're going to be pretty happy with that. Because
unless he re-injures that ankle running the first like he did.
Well, he's got to be fit. You know, he's got to be fit to run. That's right. the prerequisite there. But, you know, and the point Kazuto was making is that, well, he's more valuable as a pitcher. But I'll tell you, last year, in my estimation, he was more valuable when he was hitting than when he was pitching.
Okay.
Because it's just... You know, he said, well, that's because he lost, he lost half his pitching time of the season. I'm saying, well, if he hadn't pitched, you know, he gave up 250 plate appearances because he was pitching.
Yeah. Bite your tongue, dude.
Yeah. And he was, as a hitter, he was like the third most valuable hitter in the Pacific League. So, okay.
Okay. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so our buddy Coaster Freak, and this was a really good question. It's just that it came in right after our last show, which was 2 weeks ago.
So speed it up, dude.
No, it's no fault of ours. It's no fault of his.
This is Japan. It's somebody's fault.
Oh, all right. Well, we will blame our sponsor.
Blame the producer.
No, don't blame him. He's perfect. Anyway.
Damn. All right.
So
now we don't have a plan. If we don't have anybody to blame, how can we continue?
We should continue if you just be quiet and let me read.
Man, that hurt.
All right. The question comes from Costa Freak, and he says, Norichika Aoki is the only MLB player on Samurai Japan for the WBC. Mm-hmm. What kind of role will he have for Samurai Japan, considering there are arguably better outfielders in front of him on the Samurai Japan roster? Mm. Hashtag high heat.
Well, go ahead.
Okay. This, like I said, this was a good question when it came to us, and I was thinking, okay, you know, Aoki, you've got, here are the other outfielders. You've got Seiichi Uchikawa, who's had some injury trouble, who's kind of old, who wasn't a great outfielder. He was adequate, but not great.
Right.
You got Ryosuke Hirata of the Dragons. He's, you know, a good outfielder, really powerful arm and right. Pretty good. Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, lacking of range, not very fast, but a great bat. Seiya Suzuki, really good arm, probably better than average range, not terribly blazing fast speed, but he's got some speed. And then you've got Shogo Akiyama, who, yeah, I think he gets overrated as an outfielder, as a center fielder. Has plus speed, probably, but not a great glove, not a great arm. And you've got Aoki, so I thought, well, he's the backup center fielder.
Yeah.
That's what I thought right away. I'm like, none of those guys I would put in center field. Maybe Hirata, maybe. And I did notice that Suzuki is working out in center field, getting ready for the WBC. But apparently Aoki's going to be starting in right, is what I read.
Wow. Boy, that does that have Kokubo's fingerprints all over it or what? Maybe he's decided Sho Nakata is his cleanup guy.
Yeah, it's got his little, you know, when you've got a little kid running around the house and they touch stuff after they've been playing in the dirt or something, and you could just tell everywhere they've touched.
John's talking, I think, speaking of his childhood experience here.
Well, every little boy, I think, has some similar experience. But, yeah, you're right. It's got Kokubo's smudgy fingerprints all over it.
Come on, come back. After you've managed 100 games, you'll learn to clean up before you do this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I see him as, I would prefer, if I had, I would prefer Akiyama in the outfield to Aoki.
I think Akiyama is going to play in outfield.
I would prefer Seiya Suzuki in the outfield. I would
start him every game.
I would prefer Tsugo in the outfield.
I'd start him and yank him as soon as I could.
Yeah, and then Uchikawa, okay, so one of those guys is going to DH. Okay, because they've lost their principal DH in Ohtani. So Uchikawa, yeah, DH, Tsutsugo, Aoki, yeah, backup. I would say backup. I could play him backup in center field. I could play him backup in left field. I could back him up anywhere. But he doesn't have the arm. He doesn't have the arm he used to have. He doesn't have the. I think he's had vertigo or something that prevents him from taking good routes to the ball or. But
he's just lost his GPS. He doesn't have his iPhone. He can't get the ball.
That's what it was. They took his GPS away from him. Okay, well, maybe they give him a new Android or something. Anyway, but no, I think his role is as a person who sees Major League pitching on a daily basis, as being the player coach. You know, this is an approach that works. This is something you have to look out for. You know, having a coach tell you or a data person tell you, and I think this was the thing with Tony Barnett. Japan has lots of data. They don't always know what to do with it.
Yeah, they just overload the players with it.
And I think having Aoki there who's been there and done that is a real helpful experience. You know, this is where you can be calm. This is where you can – okay – calm time is over, time to panic, you know, so you got that person who knows when to say that.
Right. Now, I looked up the numbers, and before he played in every game for Samurai Japan in the 2009 WBC, this is Aoki, and he hit .324, had a team-high tying 7 RBIs. So I think he'd be a great backup center fielder and pinch hitter.
Yep.
Sho Nakata can even play left field, and I'd put him out there before I'd put Aoki out there on a daily basis. But here's the thing I thought, too, is you've got Tsutsugo, Akiyama, and Aoki are left-handed hitting outfielders, and Uchikawa, Hirata, and Suzuki are right-handed hitting outfielders. So you got 3-3.
That's lovely.
And if you had to make a move late in the game where, let's say, you've got Akiyama coming up, you got a nasty left-hander on the mound, and you just want to go for a better matchup, You have that freedom, and you can do that if Aoki's on the bench for you.
Well, the other thing is that Aoki hits right-hander. I mean, he hits left-handers so well.
Right, but there's just some left-handers that nobody hits well. Yeah,
true enough. But he's such a. But of course, the other thing is all the major league guys know that, you know, and they're gonna put the left, you know, if a left-hander, they'll put the, play the left fielder 15 feet behind third base, waiting for that little flare down the line. So,
I wouldn't start him for sure. I'd use him as a pinch hitter, and like you said, he's got no fear of major league pitching. He probably doesn't fear a lot of situations. He wouldn't back down from the moment, and he gets on base like crazy, where he's just such a tough at bat. I love him coming.
Yeah, I think he's a good player. I think, and I think the other thing is that, you know, playing for Japan, his concentration level is going to be higher than it is. I know he prides himself on being prepared, but, you know, the travel in the major leagues is tough on a guy who, you know, who wants to be that prepared. It takes a little more out of him than he wants to admit. He says the travel is tough. The WBC will be a good little mini window on what Norichika Aoki is best at. So I don't think he's going to kill him. You know, I think he's their fifth best outfielder. But if he started, I don't think he's going to hurt him.
Yeah, like I said, if this report I read is true today, then that's what we can look for or expect. But I'm hoping it's just a joke that Kokobo's throwing out there to get the other teams off balance. Watch out, Cuba, or Norichika Aoki. He's going to be starting. All right.
Well, they'll have a player on the roster who Alfredo De Spagna hasn't played against.
Okay, that'll help.
Yeah, well, I mean, he knows all the other Japanese players, so.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for sticking with us on a long, long show, but I hope you enjoyed those two interviews, and like I said, camp is open, and WBC is going to have its training camp. When is that going to be?
They're going to get together on the 22nd. They're starting practicing on the 23rd of February.
Okay, so that's pretty soon. That's probably around the next show, so we'll get more information from then. Until then, enjoy your camp season.
And thanks for listening.